Welcome. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two are one and the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955 to learn more about the PNWA and their fabulous summer yearly writers conference. Please go to pnwa.org. Well, my guest today, novelist Elizabeth Brundage, is the author of three fabulous novels, but before she published her first novel, The Doctor's Wife, she attended the prestigious Iowa Writers Workshop. But before she attended the Iowa Writers Workshop, she was a fellow at the Film Institute of Los Angeles. Wait, I'm getting it wrong. Oh Lord. Well, she was a screenwriter. I'll say that. A fellow at the American Film Institute in Los Angeles, which is a perfect, in a way, description of the kind of books she writes, which have a cinematic narrative sensibility combined with a literary perspective. But it's been a while since I've spoken to her. In fact, it's been since 2008 when she released Somebody Else's Daughter. And I know she's been busy since then, and so I can't wait to catch up with her and find out what's been going on. So let's get her on the show. Elizabeth, welcome to Author.
Bill, thanks so much for having me today.
Well,
how are you?
My pleasure. It's been a while.
I have to say that you definitely summed up my work with your description there of the cinematic narrative.
Yes. That's really what
it
is.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, that's really what it is. It's a cinematic narrative with a sort of literary sensibility.
I think that really is very accurate from my point of view. That's what I try to do.
So let me ask you this. When you begin a story, where do you begin? What do you start with? How does it start for
Well,
you?
That's easy to answer because it always starts with a character. Somebody sort of comes to mind and lingers in my head for a while, and I get to know that person in my head, and then they eventually tell me their story, and I write it down. So I feel like I'm kind of a translator to these. Well, I don't want to sound corny, but these
spirits
come to me.
No,
you know how it
is. Corny. Now listen, this drives me nuts. There's one thing that drives me nuts about literary writers, and I count myself among them, is their unwillingness to embrace the woo-woo.
The magic of writing.
You can't get around it.
Yeah, it's true. It is. I know. It's funny because I teach, and when I talk to my students, they kind of look at me when I say that you're sort of a medium, and
you
pick up these voices. It's true. It really is true. It's crazy. And you know what? It happens when you're a kid, and then you realize what you're really doing is writing. You've been writing for a long time.
Right.
In your mind.
That's right.
You eventually figure out how to tell a story on the page, if you're lucky, and then one thing, you know, leads to another.
That's absolutely correct. So, you know, I was just talking to Laura Littman, the suspense writer.
Sure.
And she was talking about how she and her sister used to tell these stories with their Barbies, and they had these dramatic tales.
That's so cool. I can
relate
to that.
Family sagas where there's always a question of money and class structure and all this sort of, because her
mom was
very beat up and her sisters were very pristine. And I told her, I said, you know, when I was young, we had, I think you and I are very close in age. You probably might have had these too, which are these preschool, the little preschool people, the little wooden circular people that came in with like a post office and a castle and a, well, maybe you didn't play.
Oh, yeah.
Remember,
they were
like, you know, like little towns with all these little, well, we had tons of these. And my brother and I would sit there on the floor of our upstairs hallway.
Oh, those were the cutest things. I love those things.
Right. And that's where my writing began in a lot of ways.
Yes.
With those improvisational stories that we would spin between us.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I hope that's not a lost thing for a lot of kids. I mean, I've raised three kids, and I hope not, because the games are changing. They're much different. It's a much different process, but that's like a whole different conversation, I guess.
It is. We won't. That's yes, the future of our children. We're just going to assume it's all going to work out for the best.
Let's hope so. We have to hope that.
But you used an interesting word, and it's a word I use when I teach about writing, and that is translation. Translation,
yes.
Which is different in a way than pure creation. I've often felt that I as I got older and did more writing, I myself, and I'd love to hear you speak to this, began to have to accept what I did do and what I didn't do. And I realized I was doing more translating than making.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
In other words, something was coming
I
to
do.
Me, and I was translating it. I wasn't making
right. I understand. It's also like the difference between letting the characters lead the story as opposed to creating a plot up front and letting that be your starting place. And I think different writers work differently and can succeed either way. For me, I like to start with the character and obviously some dilemma that occurs that that person has to deal with somehow. And then I like to actually, I think of the narrative, the way I develop a narrative is by really imagining being in the place that this character is in.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of opening all of the doors in the house and seeing who might be in all of the different rooms.
Right.
And so, or in the village or down the street.
Right.
And it's a great way to go about it because it's really like it makes it more fun. You know, it's sort of the same idea of moving into a new town and nobody knows you and you don't know them and learning as you go and watching the houses. When I was a kid, I used to love just around when evening, you know, it started to get dark, I'd love to go spy with, like, my friend, neighborhood friend. And we would look in the windows, you know, just as it was getting dark and the lights were coming on. And you could see so much. You could witness ordinary life, you know. And it was always really so interesting. And I think that's what writers do.
So
page,
much of what
basically.
Writing is in a way like spying. I was just thinking. I'm writing a memoir now, and so I'm writing about sort of the life behind the windows of, say, my grandparents, for instance. And so there's so much of writing is what's going on, what you see on the lawn, and then what happens behind the door.
Absolutely, I think writers are fascinated with those secrets. Yeah.
Well, you know, I remember when I was a young man. And a boy, I would get very nervous going into a stranger's house because I felt like that, I didn't understand at the time, but that's where their pain lived. That's where their full life, anything they couldn't, you know, they could go out the door and present whatever, the cleanest, you know, front they could, but it all lived in that house. And you could feel it for me. I was maybe sensitive.
I
could
love
feel
that.
It as soon as I stepped through the door.
Absolutely. That's cool. Yeah. That's going back to that idea of being a medium and being the one person who can pick up the real story underneath the veneer, which is really true.
But
it's there. Like, that's what we do.
Yeah, it's
just
there.
Definitely there. Definitely.
So when you
definitely.
Say you start with a character, so it's so interesting how they come. For me, often, I've been writing a lot of memoir lately, so I've not been in that zone, but... But when I was writing more fiction, they would start talk. I would almost like an actor. I would be talking as if in improv from this character's point of view, almost as fast as it would come. Maybe sometimes just walking around, and I would start talking from that person's point of view. How do they come to? Like, how do they? Do you see them? Are they talking?
Yeah, it's very mysterious. Actually, it's mysterious. The book I'm writing now, which is a story about a farmhouse. In upstate New York here, not far from where I live. It was actually based on a real live story that happened in another part of the country, and it's still an open case. It's a very compelling case of a murder, actually. But I started with the house itself, and I'm kind of getting to know the house, and then I start to think about the families who've lived in this house. And then all of a sudden this boy came to me, And I have a son, actually. He's 14 now. And so it's actually been a real pleasure writing this character who is a 14-year-old boy. I really am enjoying it.
Yeah.
I'm just savoring, you know, I have three kids, and my daughters are in their 20s. And, you know, our son is 14. And so I realize how fast it goes. I sound like an old lady when I say that, but... You know, it really whips by, and
yep.
I look at him and how he's changing, and I just sort of am savoring it. So I'm getting it down in a variety of different ways through this character, who's obviously a very different individual
right.
than my son is, but in a very different time and place and living in different circumstances. But I'm really enjoying trying to get the essence of what it's like to be a young boy of that age. And he's, you know, he's just one of the characters, but I'm really having a lot of fun with it. So that's
you know, it's
that's
so funny
sort of
when you said you
me.
Were writing about a farmhouse in upstate New York.
Yeah,
that was all you had said, and I thought immediately death. thought,
yeah, that's weird. Because so you're
first
psychic,
thing that
Bill.
Into my mind was haunted.
You and I are
was,
having like this psychic interchange,
aren't we?
that your audience cannot hear.
That's right.
But it's true. It's true.
But I knew it. But there is something about a house that, just like I was talking about before, that seems to hold so much. That
I love
that
image, yeah.
Secret.
Yeah, I
almost.
Like what you said. It's true, because we've moved around a lot, and I'm not really sure why we have, you know, but we have. We've moved into, we lived, when our kids were really little, we lived in this town where I'm setting this new book, which is called Malden Bridge, New York. It's outside of Albany, about 30 miles south. And we rented a series of houses, but we rented this house, which was most definitely haunted. And
okay, now why do you say that?
Oh, because I don't want to give away too much because I'm actually writing about it.
Oh, you're using some of it in your book?
I'm using a lot of it, yeah, in the book. But in a weird way, not like you would expect. I'm not writing a typical ghost story, but my kids, my girls, this was before my son was even born, and my girls saw ghosts
wow.
who were these girls, these other children who had died in a fire. It was weird. It really made me believe. I turned into a total ghost believer when I lived in that place. A lot of weird things happened.
Yeah.
But it's good for writers to live in houses like that.
You think it's good for writers
ideas.
To live in? Well,
yeah,
you
get a lot of
you
ideas.
You have to be so open as a writer. You have to be so open. This woman came to me the other day and she said, "Oh, I'm writing, but the problem is my characters are boring." You know, that's the problem.
Right.
I only had a few minutes with her and I said, "Are you listening to them? Or are you telling them what to do?"
Exactly.
You're telling
good
them
what. Good question.
But it's
yeah.
hard to describe to someone how to listen to a character. You know,
I
how
think,
would
you know,
I
what
mean,
I would
a
say
teacher,
if,
how would you do that?
Well,
how,
if a student said to me my characters are boring, I would say, try to go to a deeper level when you're thinking about the character. Think about I would give a lot of different pieces of advice. I mean, first
yeah.
of all, I would try to have them imagine what the character was like before the story opens, to
right.
step back,
yeah.
you know. And also, I would say that whenever you get stuck as a writer, I think a great thing to do, which sometimes shakes you out of this preconceived notion that you have of the character or the setting or the story that you want to tell, I always say somebody pulls up the driveway or somebody knocks at the door and your character has to deal with that stranger coming in. And it always seems to inevitably shake up the ideas, this preconceived notion that you have of your character, and it brings some fresh energy to it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you at all?
Yeah, it does. It does. And I think...
Because it could be anybody.
It can be. And I think you have to be... open to that concept of listening, that writing
yes.
is more listening than thinking. You know, it looks like you're thinking, but
that's
I don't
true.
Think
that's
you're
true.
Not really. It's not like doing
It's not
math.
Necessarily an intellectual exercise. It's
no,
much
it's
more empathetic. You know, it's how you look at the people around you and what you observe and what you hear them saying.
Yeah.
And how they behave and trying to unravel what makes them behave the way they do. I think that's the most interesting aspect of writing, really trying to unravel the motivations behind behavior.
Absolutely. I've always said that mysteries should not be whodunits, they should be whydunits.
Exactly. It's not the story that's interesting. Like in this murder case, the murder case is sort of irrelevant because it's really what led up to it. From the beginning
right.
of the relationship,
right.
from the beginning, years before, you know, like you can't just look at the, you don't look at the evidence, you don't, if that's absolutely, that's
it's
the stuff
surface.
Of television, you know, I mean,
yeah.
and it can be very compelling stuff, but however, it's always, the most interesting aspect of any story is what's going on in that character's head that makes them behave the way they do. I think that
right.
really is the essence of all great writing.
Yes, it's understanding someone else's, the understanding that everyone behaves, I really do believe this, everyone behaves based on what they perceive to be the truth, that everyone's
yes.
perception makes sense within everybody's behavior, no matter how bizarre,
right.
makes sense within their perception, and one of the jobs of the writers is to say, why would this behavior make sense? What perception
right.
would allow that
right.
behavior?
Exactly, within the context of that particular character's life, because
right.
you know everyone has a different set of yeah.
Of course.
That's totally true. Yeah, and
yeah.
it makes it really interesting, doesn't it? I mean,
oh,
you it.
Life
I think
is
that's
deep.
Why we want to write.
Oh, absolutely. The answers lie far beneath the surface, always. And when I'm writing about my own life now with memoir, I have to treat myself like a character. You
yeah,
know,
that's
I have to
tricky.
Go back to these stories that I've told. What's most interesting about it is I'm a storyteller, of course, and I've told certain stories
right.
about my life. And I, as I go back to those stories and to use them in the memoir, I can't tell them the way I had been because, to some degree, I altered them to serve the purpose, you know,
I
my
love
own
that.
Purpose.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
But I can't do that
yeah.
or it's not true within the
right.
what really drove me in those moments.
It must be interesting kind of evaluating yourself as a character in
yeah.
your memoir,
yeah.
it's sort of a poignant, you have a poignant look at it, you have to be critical, you know.
You have to remove the concept that you're a victim. Of
yes.
anything. And of course,
yes.
you have to go towards those moments where you thought you were.
Yeah.
At least I do.
Yeah.
You know, that's where, because that's where so much turns, where you thought you had no power. But it,
right.
the interesting thing about memoir is you can't
hmm.
have villains, really.
Mm-hmm. That's
most
right.
memoirs don't. You can't get away with that because I think every human being understands on some level that the idea of villain is a fictional. It's a goodness. It's a necessity for storytellers. They're useful, but in our lives, everybody's just doing their best.
Right.
Even
exactly. But
them.
I even think in the best fiction that even a character who's completely unlikable. You should read the last book I wrote, which is, it's called A Stranger Like You. Not
yep.
to just, like, be touting this book, but the guy, one of the main characters, there are three main characters, and his name is Hugh Waters, and he's really not a nice guy. He's a
right.
bad person. And people complain, some of the readers complain that he was completely unlikable. But, I mean, I think that I tried to show in him levels of, you know, humanity. I mean, I don't think he's all bad. I think there are aspects of his character that are, you know, pitiable. You understand sort of the pathology of why he is the way he is. I tried to show that. I mean, I think it's complicated. And
but he's
a bad character.
But, you know,
no,
I was just
yeah,
down,
no.
that book takes place in Hollywood.
Right.
Does it not? And
Which
I was just
like,
there myself.
Yeah.
I had been there in 1990 thinking I wanted to be a screenwriter, but then left to come up here to Seattle. And I returned there. I was visiting my brother. And I find Los Angeles to be a very challenging city emotionally on me. And for the reason that there is such a vibration of desperation. At least I pick that up.
Totally.
And a need for
totally.
Just success.
It's
just
deceptive.
For pure success's sake. You
yes.
know.
Exactly.
And I think it could bring out just the worst. Just that cumulative energy can bring out. And everybody there is ambitious. And everybody's attractive, you know, a lot of people are
right.
attractive, and a lot of people are used to, and I think it can bring out, and there's such potential for enormous success, you know, the potential for just crazy
yeah.
astronomical
yeah.
sudden success is so great, that you're all panning for gold, and I think it can bring out some very bad sides of people, you know.
Oh, definitely.
That environment.
Absolutely. You have to read this book, Ben.
Apparently.
Because you'll like it. You'll like it. It's just about that. It's exactly what I tried to write about. Because I had lived in L.A. I went to the American Film Institute, which was a very interesting place. But I was very young when I was there. And
how old were
probably
you?
Not – I was only 23
okay,
at the time.
Okay, pup.
Yeah. And, you know, it was really fascinating. It stayed with me. I don't think I could have written about it in my 20s or even in my 30s. It had to sort of,
oh, really?
I had to carry it around with me for a while. And in the book, A Stranger Like You, it's there's a place called the Conservatory, which is based on AFI. And I tried to look at the screenwriting world and what that's all about and the idea of film and sexism in the business, which I think still exists, kind of haunts. There's an undercurrent of it, even though there are a lot of very powerful women there. And so I wanted to write about that. You know, there
why
are
do
all
you
the
think it still haunts the
you
business?
Know?
What do you think it is about that bit? Because I think it's, I don't want to say, but I think in publishing it's not really so much the case. It's such a female-dominated
oh, definitely,
business.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's true.
Well,
film.
Yeah.
But
I mean, yeah, it's just, I
is
think
it the audience
because,
that the guys 18 to 25 supposedly are the most desired you know, target audience?
Yeah, I
supposedly.
Think so. I think because there's so much money involved in getting a film made and getting people to actually decide to do it. And it just started out as a male-dominated business, and it just kind of grew that way, and it took time for women to kind of break through.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's that unusual. I don't think it's that much different than, you know, other corporate businesses or banks or whatever, you know, I don't think it's that much different. When there's
a
lot of money around.
I think the energy of it is very masculine, too. I think the nature of the drive surrounding of it feels so male to me. And I don't mean that in a bad or good way, but there's a quality to male drive which can be almost suicidal, honestly, in its need for the same way women are willing to carve themselves up to be beautiful, men will do anything, you know.
Right. That's interesting.
I think it's very similar.
So let's write a book about that.
Yes, Doug, seriously. Seriously. All right, but you said, okay, so then you went from the conservatory, or in reality.
AFI,
you know,
American Film Institute, which was a great place, a really great place. And
they really
I worked
taught you
in
to write
LA
a screenplay?
For a few
years. Did you
years.
Feel like you knew how to write a screenplay after that?
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So much fun. And, you know, film is such a great medium. And we have, I mean, there's so much we can do with film. And so, but, you know, what happened for me was the reason I left L.A. was because I ended up getting married. My husband was a medical student.
Uh-huh.
We ended up moving all over the place while he was training. And so I really couldn't do film at that point. And so I started writing fiction. I was like 25. I wrote my first short story.
Wow.
I hadn't
wow.
written in college, yeah. And then
you hadn't
I was like,
written
wow.
in college?
This is... I wrote like screenplays. I actually
wow.
wrote my first feature script at Hampshire College, which is in Amherst, Massachusetts,
yeah.
a
yeah.
crazy, wonderful, amazing, progressive school.
Right.
A very important place because, you know, people don't always understand Hampshire. There are a lot of really smart kids there and trying to do different things.
Yep.
So that was in 19, you know, in the 80s. I wrote my first feature script, teaching myself how to write it, which is something Hampshire students always do.
Right.
And then I ended up going out to AFI and learning how to write one for real. But the thing is that when I started writing fiction, I discovered that I didn't have to depend on anybody else's approval. I could just write and find my way, which took a long time. I mean, it really took me a long time, and you know how that is. It's,
I do.
Writing is tough. It's a really tough thing to do. And I, at this point, I look at it, it is like medicine in a sense. It's a practice, you know. You have to
practice it. And you really, you cannot, you know, I've put in my 10,000 hours. And on one level, I would say this. On one level, and I don't want to brag, I consider myself a master in this way. If I know what I want to say, I know now, without a shadow of a doubt, I can say it. I can say it precisely. The only question is now, what is it that I'm looking
what
for?
What is it?
Right. That is the only question.
It's really tough. Because I think, you know, I don't care how many awards or how many readers you have or whatever you have. You still go back to the blank page. And
that's right.
A writer just is, you know, constantly doubting their own work. I mean, I am constantly doubting myself. And it's like, it's this most stressful thing because you want to be great at it.
Yes.
And, you know, you're driven to become better and better.
Your page is just as blank as T.S. Eliot's page was.
Exactly.
And as William Shakespeare's Papyrus was. It's just
everybody.
That's right.
And we're all, I think, and I also think what you mentioned before about the word truth, I mean, I think every writer is trying to put down their version of the truth.
Absolutely.
In a sense.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so.
And
I
you
think
owe
it's,
it to the world, by the way, because, you know, I was just talking to my wife about that this morning, because I've been writing this in my memoir about this moment in my childhood, this one of these big things that happened, you know, where there was really burned in my psyche. But I realized that the real thing that happened in that moment was I didn't speak my truth. I was too young, and the person who was putting there, who was trying to kind of manipulate the situation, was much older than I was. But I didn't, if I had spoken my truth, it all would have ended. And that was really what happened. And I think that we all have a piece
but
of
But I have to just
us.
I have to interrupt you by saying that if you had spoken your truth and this major event hadn't happened in your life, you probably wouldn't have become a writer.
You're probably
you wouldn't be
right.
writing this memoir.
Absolutely.
So
I think
everything...
I had to learn what it was not to say it. You know, sometimes you have to take drugs to know how bad it is to take drugs.
So true.
You have to be promiscuous to know how good monogamy is. And I
think
to some degree I had to know what it was not to speak to learn to speak. To
know
the value.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah,
yeah
definitely.
But you definitely have to speak the truth. You know, you perceive a version of the whole truth of life. You can't see it all, but you do see a portion of it. And as you contribute
it. Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of interesting where we're at now. I talk to my students a lot about trying to present some aspect of their worldview and grasping what that means, you know, because a lot of us now, we go to a lot of movies, and so there's this sense of a kind of general worldview. And lately... Of late, that worldview has been rather grim. I mean, all these post-apocalyptic-type movies.
Oh, I know.
Zombie films and all kinds of creatures that
and
we are
that
all
note,
well too aware of.
We are. And on that note, I'm going to say that absolutely you've got to offer your truth, and the truth is and just like Martin Luther King said, he refuses to accept that the answer to history's riddle is despair, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Offer your truth. And Elizabeth, I can't believe how fast this went. I can't believe our time is up.
I can't believe it. Are you serious?
It's up. I just heard the woman tell me we've got 30 seconds left. So, listen.
Oh, my God. You are the best. This is so much fun. I'm going to call the next book. We have to talk again.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Good luck
with
it. And
I can't wait to read your memoir, so get it done.
I will. Trust me.
Okay, cool.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Bill, thank you so much, Bill, for having me.
You're welcome. And thank you, my listeners. Another good one. Remember, share your truth. If you don't, then nobody will get to hear it, will they?